Good morning. Good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Today, I want to spend some time talking about self-care, especially since we are once again experiencing police violence on African-Americans, unarmed African-Americans, or legally armed African-Americans. It doesn't really seem to matter in the age that we're in. And so first, I want to read a poem that Lakeeta Elliott sent to me yesterday. Not sure where she got it from, but it showed up on Instagram. And so here we go. You cannot buy Skittles. You cannot wear a hoodie. You cannot sell cigarettes. You cannot play music in your car with your friends while reveling in the culture you created. You cannot play with fake guns. You cannot sell CDs. You cannot ask, why am I being pulled over? You cannot ask for help after a car accident. You cannot walk down the street with your best friend, week shy of starting college. You cannot go to your bachelor party. You cannot pray in church. You cannot sleep on your mother's couch. You cannot put your hands up. You cannot breathe. You cannot be you, beautiful boy, beautiful girl. You cannot be. You cannot be. I cannot protect you. Alton Sterling, and whoever comes next. So that poem showed up in my inbox yesterday. I have chosen not to watch the videos of the latest killings at the hands of armed police officers because it takes something out of your body every time you see and hear about the latest case, the latest example, the latest injustice that has taken place in our community. And so you have to ask yourself, so what do I do? What do I do? What do I do with all that anger? What do I do with all that pain? What do I do with all that hurt? And that's what I want to talk about today. If you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. I received, again, yesterday in my inbox, because I have such cool friends, a piece that I'd like to share with you because, in fact, people are thinking about this very hard. It's hard for me to tell young people to not be angry, to not be taking to the streets, to not be destroying stuff. I definitely believe in nonviolent political action and political activity, but days like today, where just another one last night, just another black man, which you heard from Amy Goodman this morning, that his girlfriend had the wherewithal to be posting live on Facebook the experience that they were having. And so it is clear that we have a systemic problem here in the United States of America. We have a problem, a severe problem, with policing in the United States of America. And I think the biggest problem that we have is that we have a sense that police can do no wrong because over and over and over again, what we've seen is really, really egregious behavior. And it doesn't matter whether it's on film. It doesn't matter whether there are 20 or 30 witnesses, if they're African-American. It doesn't matter if it happens in broad daylight. It doesn't happen if it's been videotaped and the world has seen it. We are continuing to tell the story that, no, what you're seeing isn't really what happened. What you've seen is really just you don't understand because you don't understand how policing happens. But I think we understand very clearly how policing happens and how policing happens based on your race. We understand that policing happens based on your economic status. And we understand that policing happens based on the neighborhood that you live in and based on the police perception of who you are. You want to join the conversation? Give me a call, 503-231-8187. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Thanks. Listen, I just want to throw something out. You know, it's immediately when I heard about these shootings, I just started thinking about how our police force has been laying low lately, in their own little way. But, you know, I want to point this out. I ride around town a lot because I do in-home health care. So I'm always running around doing something. And, you know, over, since Christmas, I've seen 4 downtown pullovers, you know, where the police pull somebody over
right.
or something. And so, you know, there aren't a lot of them downtown. And you know, and I'm just out at random. And so, you know, I've seen 4 of them. And 3 of them have been black people, you know, who've been pulled over.
Right.
And one of them, you know, the first one was around Christmas, and it was a BMW. A nice BMW, a very professional-looking guy. And luckily, he got pulled over right in front of Target, and everybody had their cameras out. And
oh, I love that.
He switched on the interior lights so that the police could see what he was doing.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm thinking, wow, I've never had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I drove for years and years. But, you know, the second and third were, you know, kind of upscale SUVs, but, you know, they weren't, like, blinged out or anything.
Right.
And they were middle-aged black men, you know. And the fourth one was, you know, I saw one white guy mm-hmm. get pulled over. Well, you know what? That's 7 or 8 months of seeing 4 pullovers.
Right.
3 of them were black people.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, it's so obvious, Joanne, and this whole thing is so obvious. And, you know, on Amy Goodman just now, one of the people Amy was interviewing mentioned a cabalah of people who, you know, who feel like, you know, it's a white supremacy thing. And it is, you know, and I don't know if these people have some informal way of communicating with each other. But, you know, these things seem to come in groups, you
yes.
know, these shootings.
Right.
And it's really, on my part, as a poor white working man, it's, you know, I mean, I always look at it, you know, and I grew up in, I'm 57, and I grew up with, well, first they came for this, and then they
came. Right, right, right. Yes, yes.
And I think people need to realize, you know, and you and I know different, but, you know, perceptively, you know, they come, bullies come for the weakest people, and they always look at black people as the weakest
right.
and mentally ill. And this is exactly what's going on. And I think, I really think that we as a society, we've dropped our vigilance.
We have. Well, and quite frankly, I think what we've done is we've given police a free ride. We've assumed, because they've convinced us that their job is so hard, that their job is so difficult, that they need all kind of special privileges to be able to do their job without any oversight, without any accountability. And so I think you're right. We have fell asleep at the wheel. We're convinced that and the police continue to convince us because they send press release out all day telling us how violent our community is. And so that's why they've got to respond and with violence. And so that when they kill somebody, we're just like, oh, well, you know, they have a hard job, you know. The job is not that hard. And most police officers are not out chasing and involved in shootouts every single day that they're on the job. There are police officers that retire without ever using their weapon. Those are not the police officers, however, that we have training police officers. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is I think, unfortunately, we're coming to the conclusion pretty quick that the people who are running our country, I mean, they seem to, I don't know where they're breeding them at, but, you know, they seem to be just, you know, I swear to God. I mean, you know, it just can't, you know, it has to be, I don't know how, they have to flunk a personality test. But, you know, the people who are running the, you know, our society at this time, you know, from Congress down to our police department,
yes,
is, you know, they are just outright, you know, psychotic bullies.
Psychotic, incompetent. I don't know what it is, but I do know that if people can't see, especially the powers that be, the people in decision-making positions, if they can't see that there's a fundamental problem, systemic problem in our criminal justice system, then they need to be removed from office.
And you know what? I have to mention one more thing, Joanne.
Okay.
You know, and I'll
I got calls stacking up, so okay, no worry.
But listen, you know, this new guy, the last thing I heard about the new police chief is he threw his stepson into the wall and created a dent in the, you know, look, I'll tell you what, I think that I would judge right now what Portland does not need is a police chief that even yelled at his stepson. Like, we are, and if anybody listening to KBOO and beyond, if they're not worried, then they should, I mean, they need to look at those videos themselves, and they need to start realizing exactly how much trouble they're in, and, you know, we place all this emphasis on the family. Well, you know what? Your kids and your grandkids, I mean, the world that they are inheriting right now is going to be literally a nightmare that's going to make a lot of regimes pale, you know, to ours.
Absolutely.
Because we're going to do that very well, you know. So I'll let you go.
I thank you very much for your call. I appreciate the fact that you're paying attention. Have a great day.
Bye-bye, Joanne.
Bye now. Before I go back to the phone line, I want to share with you there's a writer named Ryan. Let's see, what is Ryan's last name? Ryan Williams Verdon is an artist, educator, and culture worker from Northeast Minneapolis. And he wrote an incredible piece yesterday specifically addressed to white people. And the title of his piece is Deafening Silence, White Silence in Alton Sterling. And so I'd like to read this to you, and then I will go back to the phone line. And so it begins. I want to start by being very specific about who I am talking to. This post is meant for people who look like me, those of us with white skin. Many of you woke up this morning and heard the news about Alton Sterling, the 37-year-old man who was shot and killed by police in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The sickening feeling in your stomach probably hit you hard as you watched the cell phone footage of a police officer charging and tackling Sterling to the ground. You knew what was coming next, and within seconds you saw it. The police officer mounts Sterling like a UFC fighter. There's no confrontation, no struggle. Sterling is subdued, and then another officer yells, "Gun, gun!" The officer on top of Sterling pulls his gun and within seconds fires multiple rounds, killing Alton Sterling. This morning, my Facebook feed is full of yet another hashtag, hashtag Alton Sterling. So many of the black and brown people I've connected to have no need to see the video. They say as much. They already know what happened and, sadly, how this will play out. There is outrage. There is disgust. There will be calls for patience and to let the system work. What there won't be is justice. And this is where I find myself this morning, pondering my role in justice. What I've come to is overwhelmingly in its simplicity and crushing in its complexity. We are responsible for justice. I don't mean we in the vague and generalized sense that is often used. I mean we, me and you, people with white skin. The reason this genocide against people of color continues is because far too many of us remain complicit in our silence. I thought about not writing this morning. I thought about just retreating in my feelings of disgust, outrage, and grief. But that is not my job. Every time I, or any one of you, retreats into silence, we breathe life into the killing machine. Every time we urge restraint or make apologies or rationalize this brutality, we are degrading our own spirit. And make no mistake, this is a spiritual endeavor. Our souls are being crushed under the weight of whiteness. How much longer can we take it? How much longer can we acknowledge how broken our world is and ignore the weapon used to break it? I also don't mean justice as in jail time for the police, though that would be something, I think. I mean justice as in creating a world that truly values the lives of black, brown, Asian, and Native people. I mean a justice that leaves no need for an ethnic studies curriculum because truth-telling is already the curriculum. I mean a world where Black Lives Matters and Native lives and Latino lives and Asian lives, and I mean a world where Donald Trump would be embarrassed to show his face. and my students wouldn't chuckle at the idea of not having to struggle. I mean, that kind of justice. We are responsible for ushering that world into existence. The first steps to creating this justice is to understand how it was sidelined in the first place. We must understand the way that whiteness, fitting into the Anglo-Saxon archetype, has been valued historically via formal avenues such as legislation and school curriculums, as well as informal ones such as social customs, traditions, and practices. Because much of this is passed down through generations or happens away from public scrutiny or is largely implicit, it is necessary to learn and then unlearn this sordid history and way of being. Once we can come to grips with the ways whiteness keeps us from our own humanity and strangles our soul, there is no choice then to struggle for this justice. We won't struggle because we are trying to help anyone else or feel bad for them. We will struggle because our own freedom, our own humanity, is tied up with everyone else's. As we continue to bear witness to whiteness destroying communities of color while cannibalistically devouring those of us with white skin, this unlearning is the only choice we have if we ever hope for peace. This last week, a petition went around calling for the firing of Jesse Williams because his speech at the BET's award was quote-unquote racist. When Shonda Rhimes heard about it, she shut it down quickly. That is positional power, and it's a real thing. Well, white folks have positional power in society. Once we have unlearned whiteness, and even before that, we need to be using this power not to simply name our privilege and then cower behind guilt. That is about as weak as weak gets. We need to use it to stand up and demand fundamental, radical, structural changes. To fail to do this is to betray humanity. It is to betray ourselves. There must be no compromise here. There is no compromise with the humanity of our brethren. This is especially true on days like today, days when whiteness has taken another life, left another family fatherless, left another community in mourning, trying to survive loss. These are the days when our voices need to be the loudest. There must be clarion voices calling for the dismantling of whiteness. The silence is deafening, and it must be broken. Lives, ours included, depend on it. I want to thank you very, 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 very much, Ryan, for this incredible post, Ryan Williams Verdon. I certainly appreciate it. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
That was very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't even know where to start here, you know, but as a mother, this man last night worked for the school district.
Me too.
Was driving his girlfriend and her 4-year-old daughter.
Right.
People forget that.
Right.
There was a little child in the car while this man blew this man away.
Yep.
And his mother said they train their children, teach them to comply, 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 comply whenever you're stopped by the police. D.L. Hughley said the same thing this morning. He was on the television this morning, and he started crying.
Mm.
He said he has grown children. His grown children live with him, and his wife will tell you that he keeps his clothes on until every child is home at night to make sure they don't need him.
Right.
Okay, that's wrong. That is wrong for anybody to have to live like that, and it's wrong. You know, I have mixed-race children, and I don't like to use that as some kind of validity of my words. But I want to say that no mother should have to experience the stress every time their child goes out the door of wondering if they, their child, is going to have the wherewithal and the intelligence and the spiritual strength to be able to handle a possible encounter with someone from law enforcement.
And what's sad about that, Frances, is that we have to teach children to be more adult than these
yes.
so-called adult professionals.
And don't do this because you might upset them.
Right.
What
right.
kind of crap is that?
You will scare them, right? And if right. they're that fearful, they're in the wrong profession. If
and
you are fearful.
Young man last night.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Frances.
Young man last night, his mother said, what was the point of teaching him to comply? He complied and he was still murdered.
Killed, right. He was still murdered,
okay.
right. And murder
he
is.
The officer, he had a concealed weapon. He followed the rules when you're trained. When you go through training to have a concealed weapon, if you're ever stopped by the police, you tell them you have a concealed weapon,
right.
you show them your permit. He was complying completely. And they blew him away in front of this little girl. And one thing that in that video I just heard this morning, the little girl, when they handcuffed the woman and put her in a police car, why? I mean, that's what alarmed me the most. But after they killed this man, then all these other officers show up and point the guns at her and make her get out of the car.
Her and her 4-year old. Her and her 4-year old. Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
And she's in the car and starting to realize that he's dead, and she's starting to freak out. And you hear this little girl's voice say, I'm here for you, Mommy. I'm here.
Yes, I heard that.
And I thought, my God, are people sick? My niece just posted something yesterday to white people and asking them, why is it that they're not all outraged and up in arms? Why do you always try to tell people they need to calm down?
Right.
There's nothing to calm down about.
Right. We've been calm. We've been very calm.
Thank you. And Hillary Rodham Clinton, your super predators are those police everywhere in this country and those warmongers that you work for. Those are the super predators.
Yes. Thank you so much, Frances. Appreciate the call. Bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hi, Joanne. Love your work.
Thank you
so much. Hey, I have to take issue with a couple of things in the post that you read. One
okay.
was the whiteness took another life. That's not really a constructive a statement that it was included in there, and I would just call on those who serve in the police force for courage. It's really I think it's lacking in all those cases. It really it's a tough job, and it requires real courage, and too often the reaction is like you just said, it's fearful.
Yes.
And it requires great courage to face those situations where they feel threatened and they act in courage. There was an article where the police officer of the year several years back was off duty, and he was in a bar where the assailant came in and drew a weapon and fired on two of the workers in the bar, and the police officer drew his firearm and, identified himself to the assailant. And because it was a crowded space, he ended up confronting him with his firearm, but he took several rounds before he fired. And he actually, made sure that before he fired, he was there was no risk of an innocent person being victimized. It required tremendous courage to show that restraint, and they put themselves at risk. The episode that occurred yesterday and all these episodes were really where they surrendered to fear. And the mentality is, better to be judged by 9 than to be carried by 6.
Well, but unfortunately, that seems to be the mindset. I mean, we have way too many cases of less than a minute after a police officer arrives, a community member is dead, right? And supposedly, these are well-trained professionals. And if you're a well-trained professional, fear should not be what's guiding your actions, Because if you're a professional, you've been trained for any situation that you're going to encounter. And so I don't buy the fact that somehow they're so brave, they're so, you know, they're putting their lives on the line. Most of the time, their job is not putting their life on the line. Most of the time, they're riding around just observing activity that's taking place. So I'm not going to go there. And let me also, you challenged the statement about whiteness killed someone else. I just want to say those aren't my words. Those are the words of the blogger, Ryan, that I read, Ryan Williams Verdon. And so, as you know, I'm not white. And so I read this, his words, his conversation to other white people. And so just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And the other qualification, the other thing you mentioned, the training, the case study occurred in Portland, one of the most tragic cases I'd ever heard of, where a young boy in Laurelhurst neighborhood was killed after an assailant had held him hostage, and two police officers confronted the assailant who had the child at knife point.
Yes.
And it couldn't have been more tragic. And I mean, they fired more than 20 rounds.
Killed the kid and the
kid.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know why that isn't part of the training. If there's not a better case study for restraint, courage,
and
I mean, I feel like if that case not part of Portland police training or police training in more widespread area, I can't think of a better case for, you know, for restraint.
Well, and in that and in that particular case, the parents of that kid who was killed did not sue the police. What they asked for is that the training be enhanced, improved for Portland police officers. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened. That has not happened at all.
It
does need to. And we need, quite frankly, training is another whole piece, because there's this perception by police that only police can train community police officers. And I thoroughly disagree with that. I think if you want community police officers, you need community helping to train community police officers. You know, I don't know what to expect with the latest chief, but I certainly hope he will support that effort as well. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I want to let you know that next week, is it next week? Next week is our special one-day membership drive that we're going to do next Thursday. And I will have the pleasure of interviewing Nick Licata, whose recent book, Becoming a Citizen Activist, Stories, Strategies, and Advice for Changing Our World, I think we couldn't be talking about this at a better time. And so I will be talking to him next Thursday during our one-day membership drive, and I hope you will call and support that effort. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Aaron. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanna.
Good morning.
Love your show, but I hate calling as much as I've been calling because of like this, because it just seems like I knew I was going to call this morning because I saw what happened on the news. But as soon as I woke up, I'm like, here we go again.
Right.
And it starts to wear you down. Your last caller, and I've worked, and I've called you before. I'm ex-military.
Yes.
Used to work in law enforcement, probation. The fact is, he mentioned, you know, police officers. This is the safest jobs in the world. You're right. Construction work is more dangerous than being a police officer.
Yes.
A cop is more likely to commit suicide than be killed by a criminal. And then to the post that you read when he stated, the person that wrote the post talking about we being white.
Right.
Exactly right, because I'm a black man and I legally have a firearm, but I see myself as a quote unquote, I'm a good guy with a gun. I am not. I am a threat. Mm. So if I get pulled over, and if I have a gun in my glove box and I let that police officer know that, he's probably going to shoot me because, look, he had a gun.
Right.
But I legally have a gun. So it's a conundrum. Like, well, I'm going to get shot either way.
Right.
You know, and it's pathetic. And that goes against what the NRA lies and tells us about the good guy with the gun myth. And I noticed that they've been quite silent on Twitter.
Yes.
Because Philando Castile, legally had a weapon. He was shot four times.
Right.
And they're going to say he was going for his gun. Why would he go for a gun when he had his girlfriend and his daughter in the backseat? It doesn't make sense.
It does not.
And as someone who worked law enforcement, you hear these little buzz and code words, because these cops, people hate when I say this, cops lie. I noticed when the cop was shooting in the window, he started screaming, "I told you not to go for it." See, what they're doing is they're covering their butt.
Yes, they are.
They probably know they're yes. being videotaped.
That's right.
Same thing with Alton Sterling.
Yes.
After he was shot, I hear that after the gunshot, you hear him screaming, "Stay on the ground." He's already on the ground.
Right.
He's been shot. So they go into this psychological cover your you-know-what mode.
Yes, yes.
And that's what they're doing. And it just, to me, it's happening so much, and I hate to say this. I can give all the stats. I can talk about Jesse Williams. You can have all the cell phone video you want. Like with Shonda Rhimes, she has the power to do something. Jesse
yes,
Williams
yes.
is going anywhere.
Yes.
We can't, you know, we can sit up here and talk and have this intellectual conversation. And yes, it feels good to discuss this morning, but we have Loretta Lynch. We still have a president of color. They see what's going on. Something needs to be done, because if it's not done in the next several months, it's not going to get done when Hillary takes office, because I'm a super predator, according to her.
Right. That's right.
And I'm old.
Right. Right. Yeah, you should not be seen as a threat, however, comma. Well,
but real quick, when it comes to Portland and I call them my white ally. I'm married to a white woman, and I see white people as allies, especially
right.
in incidents like this. When things like this happen, they do need to speak up. When James Chassie was killed, they made a movie
yes.
called Alien Boy.
That's right.
We need the same sort of look at what's happening every day. You know, and I watched the movie, and his death was tragic. But why is that death more tragic than what's going on every day in the streets of America?
Absolutely true. And, you know, we do. The good news is that here in Portland, there is a film called Arresting Power that was developed by three women filmmakers that actually talks about the history of police violence and resistance in Portland. In fact, I'm going to show it to my class when I leave here today. And you could find that online. And it's real stories of real people who have lost their lives at the hands of the police in Portland. And so I think in Portland, because we've convinced ourselves, you know, we're so progressive and so liberal, on and you know, use the adjective that we want to be appalled by what happens in Ferguson or what happens in Baltimore, what happens in St. Louis, but we don't want to deal with the fact that this happens right here in Portland. I can hear it in your voice. I hear the emotion. I hear the frustration. I hear the anger. All well placed, all absolutely appropriate, because what is the message that we give to our children today? What is the message how do we keep them safe? Like I started off with this little poem about you can't even send the kid to the store to get Skittles, right? Because, you know, over and over again, whether it's selling CDs or selling cigarettes or going to buy Skittles, it could cost you your life. And so,
and the thing about that is that George Zimmerman wasn't even a cop. He was just
a wannabe.
Yeah, he was a soft little wannabe. I could say, I'm not going to get, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keep it G.
Thank you for your show. I really, like I said, I appreciate your show, but I know when I call in, it's usually about law enforcement.
Right.
And I hate calling in as much as I do, because this is enough's enough. But
you know, your opinion and perspective is vital, because quite frankly, if we're ever going to change law enforcement, people who really know law enforcement have to help us make that change happen. Right. Because I could be outside all day, every day saying we got to change. We got to change. And I have some ideas of what changes need to happen. But it's going to take folks in law enforcement pushing for that change as well as those of us outside.
Well, thank you and I appreciate that thing. And I'm pulling in that up, Arresting Power right now. So I'm going to check this out, because I might show this in my class. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for calling. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I think, you know, we're going to be spending some time in grief. We're going to be spending some time in processing. But I certainly hope that on the other side that we'd start figuring out how do we collectively make change happen. I mean, you know, right now, the city of Portland, we have an opportunity to rebuild the Portland Police Bureau to be a kind of police bureau that we actually want to have and could be a model for the nation. But we're not going to do it if we're not transparent. We're not going to do it with underhanded policies and procedures. And we're certainly not going to do it if we don't have a leadership team that the community has trust is willing to do the right thing. And so back to the phone line. Good morning, Sunny. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sunny.
Sad morning.
Yes, it is.
And I thought Francis's remarks about the super predators
was right on, huh?
We got super predators right up on top of the pile. And I believe that a big factor in this is the underlying force of the secret society, some, that came to this country with the idea that this is their country from the word go. The moment they set foot on the country, it's meant for their white skin and their ways. And due to the internet, they've been able to draw closer and increase their numbers, and it's got them thinking that they've got the country, and they don't. This is America, and before any of the white colonizers came here, some of whom are my own ancestors. There were many, 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 many nations, and there were nations within nations. I mean, there was an understanding amongst the American Indian people and that there people have different ways. That group over there has this belief about the Creator. That group over there might not even believe in the Creator. That group over there does this, does that. But we can work it out. We can trade together. We can keep the We can keep nature healthy and strong. We can make sure that the children grow up happy within each nation. And this attitude that's gaining, thinking that it's gaining strength and that it's strong enough to strike, is rearing its ugly head. And they're trying to put us in our place. And the truth is, this is our place.
Yes.
We are one people.
Yes.
And I hope that perhaps you and I and others can get together and start one people picnics where the people that understand this is America, we are one people, red, white, black, yellow, cross, gender, class, sexual preference, all that kind of stuff. And I think a one people, you know, you're either with us or you're over there in psychosis.
I was going to say, you're starting to sound like Bush. You're either with us or you're with the enemy.
Well, you know, excuse me. You know, look what this divisive element is brewing.
Oh, yes. Well, quite frankly, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, we've had almost a year of Trump spewing hate all over the land. By the time the summer is over, we're going to be full-fledged into a hate-mongering campaign for presidency of the United States with no good choices in that process. And so just hold on. What I hope is that we figure out now, how do we heal? How do we create those healing spaces so that we can take care of ourselves?
Absolutely.
Because this is for the long haul. This is not going to be solved tomorrow or next week or next year or 5 years from now. This is a long haul battle that we have to prepare ourselves for.
Yes, and we have many ecologic challenges to prepare for at the same time. And basically the mature grown-up people realize that it's more important to be productive, positive, and peaceful. You get more accomplished that way.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to do, and we're already rolling up our sleeves, and we're just, aside from all this weird mental illness, drama, stuff that they try to put on us as the real reality, which it does have an element of reality, but it's got a lot of mental illness and psychosis in it.
Yes.
We shall address ourselves to the truth, and the truth is the real needs of people, and the truth is that everybody is equal. And you know, I'll say this real quickly, and then I'll jump off. Jump off a building. No, I'm just joking.
No jumping off buildings. That's not funny.
I'm sorry for my...
It's
that's
okay.
Bad. Okay, but the thing is, Obama, in his endorsement of the Queen, Hillary, who should be facing big-time trouble from the Justice Department over what she's done with her emails, right? But anyway, he said, she's the one that can bind us across... transgenderism and all sorts of stuff, you know, for equality. But, you know, at the end of his long list, he forgot to mention she can bind us racially and across classes. It's like he's not even talking about race at this late point.
No.
And he isn't talking about class. And the thing about it is he was never really a black American man, because he comes from Kenyan aristocracy and he comes from white American aristocracy, and I don't think he ever did get it, really. I think he was put forward as a front, and the people that do get it got to get together and show how much we do respect one another.
Well, Sonny, I appreciate your call as always. I hope you have a fabulous day.
Well, I'm going to come over and see you soon.
Very cool.
All right. Look forward
to it. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Richard. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, long-time listener.
Thank you for calling.
First-time caller.
I appreciate you listening. What's on your mind?
Well, I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm actually living in the center.
Uh-huh.
But I'm actually originally from Seattle.
Okay.
Okay, well, I've been through a lot of racial, protests
mm-hmm.
in Seattle.
Right.
Back around the end of Vietnam and Martin Luther King and stuff. I just want to know, why can't... I'm sorry, I got allergies.
No worry.
I can't understand why us white people aren't recognized as an advocate for racial equality, which I see that we are in my little community, we are racially, you know, equal. But for some reason or other, I think the black community has just put down the racial or the white race as a big commodity, and not really thinking about the individual. Am I wrong? Am I thinking narrow?
I think you are thinking a little narrow. I think I think the big picture thinking would be looking at the systems that we have in place, right? Policing is a perfect example of a system,
that's true.
And if you remember, policing is a great example. We created policing in the United States as slave catchers. So the fundamental role they had was tracking down runaway slaves and returning them to their slave masters. Policing hasn't changed. Policing hasn't changed much since that original mindset, because today policing is about protecting property and property owners, not people. Property and property owners. And you know this is true because anytime there's a major protest scheduled to happen, the police come out and protect the bank buildings. They come out and protect the business interests. And, you know, but it's not, doesn't have anything to do with the people. And so I think we cannot talk about race without talking about how a white supremacist mindset has institutionalized inequality in the United States of America and here in Oregon.
I understand that. Yeah.
Right. So
well,
that's
thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome. And so it's not an indictment of all white people, because there are some fabulous white people working on really trying to help other white people around race issues. Surge is a great organization standing up for racial justice. They have a website. They have a Portland chapter. Don't know if they have a chapter in your neighborhood, but if you go online to SURJ, org.
S-U-I-J. S-U-I-J.
S as in Sam, U as in yep. Utopia, S-U-R-J, R as in run, J as in Jacob, right? So if you
I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. And so they do some fabulous work because they understand that if you want to undo racism, white people are the ones that have to undo racism. Black people, brown people, Asian Pacific Islanders, we're not going to undo racism. White people have to undo it. So white people have to have those conversations with white people first, and then they could be good, strong allies with communities of color, right? You got to work your stuff out before you become an ally. And so that's key.
Okay.
Okay. Make sense?
I do understand that.
Cool. Cool. So, yeah.
It looks like a little more initiative on my side.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
And I'm 71 years old. And I don't know how much more initiative I can get, but...
Hey, but you got the right spirit, you got the right attitude, and you're willing to learn. I mean, that's better than most. So I think you're doing a fine job.
Wow. I love my black brothers and sisters. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Have a fabulous day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. Okay, we're getting down to the last 10 minutes of the program. I want to remind you that next Thursday I will be talking with Nick Licata, and he has a new book, Becoming a Citizen Activist, Stories, Strategies, and Advice for Changing Our World. Well, we certainly need to change our world, and I hope that we get some great advice from Nick for how to do that. We're going to go back to the phone line.
Joshua.
Good morning, Joshua. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Hi. I was just wanting to talk about whiteness being responsible for, you know, these problems. And I think that a lot of people can't comprehend, a lot of white people especially can't comprehend this because we can't look outside the systems that perpetuate this for solutions.
Right.
You know, a moral response to these. You know, no one is surprised anymore.
Right.
And a moral response would be to say, I'm not going to pay taxes to ensure this doesn't happen to another person.
Mm.
But that's outside, you know, the realm of privileged people. We have families. We can't do that. We can't help sustain protests because we have jobs. I'm talking about myself.
That's right.
And so all the solutions come from, you know, within these systems. We hope we get federal funding for body cameras, and that's all down the road, and non-existent, and can be watered down, and are largely shaped by those people who are in power, and so it's just wholly inadequate.
What?
I just want to say, until we can talk about, until it's mainstream, you know, refusing to pay into this system, and accepting those consequences, and people in privilege, white people, can better sustain and better continue a movement like that. They have more resources. They're able to, you know, and it has to come from them.
Yes.
First, because, you know, that's my feeling. It has for myself.
I appreciate
well.
You.
I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing up the body cam, because that, talk about a scam. So you got the same people, Taser, who have sold tasers to every police department across the country, now trying to sell body cameras to police departments across the country. And I want to remind Oregonians that we have passed the weakest possible body cam legislation in the last legislative session that actually is just the opposite of police accountability. And the body cam legislation that we have in Salem, that passed Salem, we were told in Portland that the Portland community would be able to weigh in for a more stringent policy. And then we find out that we have the current mayor negotiating a body cam policy behind closed doors with the police union 1 year before their contract expires. So he didn't have to be doing that. But he's doing it behind closed doors, negotiating something that there's no policy in the city of Portland around body cams. And so he's been trying to sneak and slip and buy those body cams. And I think, quite frankly, that Taser Incorporated is buying off police agencies to convince them that these body cams somehow are going to be their saving grace. And as we heard earlier today, the police know how to talk into the body camera to make it appear that someone is doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. We heard that with the case last night, that, you know, the police are very good at figuring out how to frame what's taking place so that you don't believe what your eyes are telling you. And so I think any opportunity we have here in Oregon to stop body cameras from being purchased and to stop them from being implemented, because who wants body cams where the cops own the video, the cops decide when it gets released, and Portland police want to be able to review the video before they write their written reports. And so what purpose do they serve except to make a Taser Incorporated richer and to make the taxpayers poor? So that's my little rant. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I appreciate that you are paying attention to this, and because it sounds like, you know, and of course you can't make judgments about people just based on their voice, but I'm guessing you're about 20-something, 30-something?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I think it's fabulous that you are actually engaged in this dialogue and trying to figure out where your place and your role in making fundamental change is. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Joanne.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. And we're getting minus on minutes, so back to the phone line. Hello, Greg Willow. Welcome to KBOO.
It's Red Willow.
Oh, Red. Good morning, Red
it's
Willow. Welcome to KBOO.
So I just have, thank you for taking the call. What I have in mind, first of all, I can't get out of my mind the image off of Facebook that had the police badges here in Portland that said, "I am Darren Wilson."
Oh, yes.
And these are the things that have not been addressed. And it seems to me, as someone has a history in mental health and studied it for a long time, that you can screen for racism. You can screen for people that are liable to pull a trigger really quick.
Right.
You can screen for these things. And I feel like that if we were to do nothing else, we should screen for bigotry, people that are fearful, and other ones that have a tendency to want to shoot others no matter what.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, in this area, there's one guy who does the screening for most police departments in the Portland metropolitan area, and that's the problem. We have over 15,000 registered psychologists in the state of Oregon.
Well, is he a white male?
Of course.
With KKK and his a history background? I'm telling you, there is a culture here.
Yeah, and then
there is a culture.
There is. And he's the one. So, I mean, I haven't done that research, but somebody should. Somebody should find out how one guy gets to decide how people become police in the Portland metropolitan area for every policing agency. Right.
And bring in the mental health people that can say that this is a problem. This is an illness in our community. It has to get fixed.
Well, you know, that's why the DOJ is here, right? Supposedly.
Well, yeah, right. But, they're the same old white guys.
Yep. Same old, same old. Thank you for your call.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Have a great day. Bye. We'll get this last one in. Good morning, Dennis. You get to be the last word, or almost last word. I get to be the last word.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm an old white guy. I'm 78 years old. I've seen a lot of things in my life. But it occurred to me as I was listening to this program and thinking about what happened in Baton Rouge, there's a poem that applies here. You started this show with a poem. This is a poem from someone named William Blake, who was an English poet in the 19th century.
Okay.
But it's still I think his poetry is timeless.
Okay. Got to be quick.
Okay. So this is an excerpt from a Little Boy Lost, and he railed against organized religion all his life. So the little boy speaks. He says, "Oh, Father, how can I love you or any of my brothers more? I love you like the little bird that picks up crumbs around the door. The priest sat by and heard the child. In trembling zeal, he seized his hair. He led him by his little coat and all admired the priestly care. And standing on the altar high, lo, what a fiend is here, said he, one who sets reason up for judge of our most holy mystery. The weeping child could not be heard. The weeping parents wept in vain. They stripped him to his little shirt and bound him in an iron chain and burnt him in an holy place where many had been burnt before. The weeping parents wept in vain. Are such things done on Albion's shore? Albion could be, that's England. It could be the United States.
Right.
The poem speaks volumes.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. And on that note, we're out of time. I really appreciate the ending with that poem. You have a great day. Joanne Hardesty. I'll see you next week, where I'll be interviewing Nick Licata, Becoming a Citizen Activist. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Steve. Have a great day. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station.
Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that dangerous gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Hey, good morning. It is KBOO Portland, community radio for Portland, Oregon. A minute before 9 on this Thursday morning.
Get up.